Good morning, America. How are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I cannot go on stage in the beautiful New Orleans without the musical reference. And that was, of course, Willie Nelson with the City of New Orleans. It's not totally true for me because it's not morning yet and I'm not native for you, but I'm up for adoption, so you can might as well adopt me. So, I am Olav Tvedt. I'm a Norwegian Viking, so I had my longboat rowing over here, arriving at Friday. And I wanted to check out some music and some technologies. So I just took a trip on Friday up to Graceland and took the VIP tour and come back with this picture. This is actually a desk that RCA gave to Elvis Presley as a gift, custom made. And the desk has a radio, 8-track, and an 8-inch TV. This was the first 8-inch TV ever built because they didn't believe they could build it that small and put it in something like a desk. It also had a calendar, of course not a computer calendar, and a phone register. So we can see that Elvis was quite high-tech. I'm pretty sure that this desk is quite hard to configure and tune, but maybe we should start to see if we can do it on our systems instead. We have a mission, and the mission is very simple. When we're talking about configuring and tuning, it's a very simple mission. We want actually happiness. Everybody wants happiness, right? And if you want to be happy, you must make sure that you don't get pesky phone calls from users that are miserable because the system isn't running good enough. We can see now that a lot of focus is pushing out new services to the users, but we forget to optimize the user experience. And if the users are not happy, the board will make bad decision and maybe fire us. So we need to keep the users happy so they keep the board happy so we can be happy. So the mission is simple, right? Happiness. There are some challenges for us to get to happiness, of course. There always is. But we will see that we can try to solve this simple mission with quite a few complex challenges. So we will go into them and have a look at what we should be thinking about now. We have had a big change of responsibilities. We have the traditional clients, that's PCs in different shapes. And in the traditional clients, I also put in tablets, because if it's a Windows 8 tablet with Windows 8 Pro, it's just an ordinary PC. You can manage it just like you would manage each other laptop and PC in your environment. But we also now have gotten mobile clients that we don't have control over. It could be tablets, it could be mobile phone, and it could be non-domain clients. So we have more stuff to think about now than we had before. We have a page at Microsoft that can help us. It's a Springboard page. If you go to microsoft.com/itpro or microsoft.com/springboard, you will get a lot of help in your day-to-day settings. Let's just take a quick peek. Here we have the Springboard Hub. We can go in and find out what phase we are in now. Let's see on Windows 8. We are looking for some Windows 8 information. The network just won't come up. And we can divide it in if this is planning. Do we want to explore? Do we want to implement? Do we want to manage or support? So the Springboard page are divided up in the phases we are in. So it's easy to find information relevant to the phase we are looking for. If we are out doing deployment, Then we can go in and see deploy Windows 8. We will find videos, we will find white papers, and guides that will take us through the process of deploying. There will be information about MDT, Windows Deployment Services, configuration managers, and so on, with everything you need to learn the deployment phase or get help during the deployment phase. So use the Springboard page to find information. We also have some tools from Microsoft that could help us optimize the experience for both us and the users. And that's the package of Desktop Optimization Pack for Software Assurances. We can go in and we can use stuff like BitLocker Management, the MBAM, BitLocker Administration and Monitoring. We can use virtual application with application virtualization for desktops, APVI. And we have a lot of different tools we can use. I will take a look at some of those. I will take a look at the user experience virtualization. I will look at the advanced group policy management and the enterprise desktop, diagnostic and recovery toolset. But all the tools are made to make the user experience better. If you have devices that need to be managed, but they are not in your domain, or it's RT devices, mobile phones, and stuff like that, we got a message on the keynote that stuff have changed. Bring your own device will be totally different in Windows 8.1 and Server R2 and System Center R2. We will have a much better bring your own device experience. But today we can also use Intune either with the configuration manager or by itself to manage those devices. So even though if it's not in your domain, you can still have a sort of control over them by antivirus, application deployment, and collect some inventory. There will be a session, or there have been a session, but you can download it and look at it later. That's in the bottom of my slide, so you can go in there and check it out if you want to go deeper into the RT in the enterprise. The first phase we will enter is the deployment phase. If we are going to tune and configure, we need to do it from the beginning. And to make a good deployment, we need to have some serious thought behind it before we start deploying. We need to know what to deploy, how to deploy it, but also what we can do to maximize the user experience from the beginning. So we are talking tuning and configuration already when we start to think about to deploy. So in the deployment phase, we have mainly three things we are going to talk to today. It's the master image. How should we set up our master image that will be deployed to all the computers in our network? How could we do recovery with the Windows recovery environment better than the built-in? And we can also see how the users can refresh his computer in a better way if he just remembered to refresh his refresh image. So let's begin with the master image. The master image should never ever be the DVD that you downloaded. It should be an updated image that you either have patched up or you have recreated it by installing it and capturing it. And the best way is always to install and capture, because then you get all the updates and everything you need. This process should be automated, because then you can do it whenever you want. And you should recreate your deployment image at least every third month, because there are new updates. If you are missing updates in your image, you will use longer time to deploy it to your client if you update it during deployment, or you will deploy an image that needs to be updated when the user are using it, and then it's a security risk. So we will make sure that you automate the process. Windows 8.1 will also give us several benefits now. If we are going today to create a start menu that the user can use and get familiar with, so it will always be the same start menu and it will always be the application you want to be the application in the beginning of the installation, then you need to use a copy profile. I have just taken a screenshot of the copy profile. It's quite an easy job, but the copy profile will actually just copy the administrator's profile from the image we are going to capture to all the users. So we just log on as an administrator, make everything look good on the start menu, and then we capture it with this XML file used, and then it will automatically make sure that every user booting up the first time on this computer will have the exact same menu as the administrator. In 8.1, that will change. In 8.1, you will actually be able to control this by using an XML file. You can export a setup with PowerShell, and you can import it with PowerShell or with a group policy. So finally, in 8.1, we can create nice start menus and push it out to all our users. So that's a great thing. The Windows recovery environment that's default in the image is a nice feature that can help you in many ways to solve problems, but you can also use the Dart, the Microsoft Diagnostic and Recovery toolset, to do lots more than you can do on the default recovery. So we're going to have a small demonstration about that in just a short while, so I will not go into the different choices now. I will take it when we show it. We also have default refresh image. Everybody here might know that the refresh procedure will remove everything except your app store and your files. And that's true as long as you haven't updated the refresh image. So we would actually get the user, or we will create a command line that could be scheduled to do this every now and then, or the user can have a shortcut to do it, that will copy everything into a new Vim file with all the applications, and then when you take refresh, it will be like you had in all the application installed. So it will not refresh back to the original state it was. If it's an OEM image, you can remove application, add application, you can run these commands that we will take a look at quite soon, and then you will suddenly have an image that it's much better fitted and ready to use. So you don't have to refresh and then add application, remove application, and do a lot of modifying. When we have the disaster and recovery toolkit, we also want to implement that part into our image. We can do that during deployment in Configuration Manager or MDT, or we can do it later, like I was showing on the demo. But that would just create a Dart file, take the Dart file, the Vim file, into the user computer, and set it to boot the next time you are going into recovery mode. You want it to boot from the Dart instead of the ordinary recovery. So let's have some demonstrations. First thing we are going to do is to put in my image created with, let's see here, created with Dart. We are going to show how to create the image later, but I have on this disk created a WinRE folder that actually have a boot Vim. That's the Vim file from the Dart CD. I'm a little bit of a cheater, so I have written down the commands here. The first thing you need to do is rename the boot Vim that Dart creates to winre.vim, so it will have the right name. And then you have the commands that call re agent c. You have the information. Sorry, I need to type it here. that will give you information about what this recovery image you are using now. I am now using the default recovery image. It's pointing to device hard drive 0 partition and recovery RE. So it's a hidden file that I cannot see, but it's in there. So the next thing I want to do is to make sure that it points over to the right image. And before I can do that, I need to disable the image already used. With the disable command, when you have disabled it, it just goes through and point to the set RE image. The set RE image will then point to the folder I just showed you in the CVNRE. It could be a hidden folder because you don't want the user to see it, so you can hide it if you want. But I show it so you can see it. I'm missing some parameter error. Yes. I think it's the file location. Part, we're missing part. Like that. And then we need to make sure that it's enabled by just using the enable command. Oh, I pointed to the wrong file. Yeah, sure. Just jump over that one. Just use the wrong file name, sorry. So that's everything you need to do. Most likely, you will do this during the deployment of the Windows to the clients, because then you just do it as a task. So you put it into the default image, and you just run the command as a part of the deployment process. And when you boot up, then you will have the Dart image up and running. I have it up and running already on this computer. So here I have booted into the WinRE environment. I have the troubleshooting options. That's the default options, but you can also see I now have diagnostic and recovery toolset as a selection here. So if I go in there, we can select the operating system we want to recover or work with. And the good thing with the Dart is that it actually, even though your OS isn't running, it will connect to the OS to get all information it needs. So going in here, we can see we can have a registry editor that actually goes in and read the registry of the Windows that haven't been booted yet but are on the hard drive. We have disk commander, we have file restore, we have computer management where we can go in and read the log files. We have the event viewer. And it now uses some time because it goes in and read the log from the disk from the Windows that's not running, but it will still have connection to it. So we can go into the Windows logs, into the system files, and we can see if we can find a reason why the system won't boot. We also have the hotfix uninstall. I had one customer that had a computer that didn't want to boot, and it was a lot of important stuff on the computer. It was actually a server with customer relation systems on it, and they needed to go get up and running, and it was looping in a hotfix installation. So they didn't know what to do, but we just booted up with disaster recovery, and we uninstalled the hotfix, and everything was working again. And then we just blocked that hotfix, and the customer was extremely happy. We can also go to remote connection. If this is a user and he's not sure what to do now, we are booted into the recovery environment, but I don't know anything more. Remote connection, you can then get information that call every help desk and type in a telephone number there if you want to. And then they can actually remote connect with the IP address, ticket number, and the port number showing up here. We can control the port number to be whatever port we want it to be, or it can be a random port. It depends on how we want to do it. So then that will give the user the possibility to get extended help, either to try it himself or to call the IT department and make them remote control into the computer. We also have the refresh image possibility. That's a different set of commands. I have already created one here on my computer because it takes some time, but we have the refresh. Custom refresh.vim will be the refresh image that we are using. It's quite similar to how we change recovery image. We have the command sets over here. Show refresh image first. Oh, that's not the command. Refresh image. We have the show current command. And it will tell me that I have no active custom recovery image because this is not an OEM installation. This is just a default installation on a virtual machine. If it had been an OEM installation, we would actually now be able to change the OEM image or replace it with our modified version of it. So we wanted to use the image we have created already, and then we just use set current. Operation completed successfully. If we now go to the show current, it will tell us that we are now using our custom refresh image. So if I now need to refresh this computer, I will have all the application I have installed in my refresh cyclist. To create it, it will go some time, but it's just the command of pointing to the location you want to use. And you can call it different folders if you want to have more refresh images, so we can create different backup in time, for instance. So if you want to make sure that you have the original OEM image laying ready for you, you can have version number 2, version number 3, and so on, by just creating different folders. I'm not going to run this now because it takes some time. I have put in the commands in my slide deck, so if you need to take a look at them later, you will find them in the slide deck. The Dart image I used is an image I have created by downloading Dart from the company portal or MSDN or TechNet site, depending if you have the licenses. You can download it. You can also now download trials of the MDOP package. So I will show you how we have created the image. We have the Dart recovery image. Start it. One of the great news in it is, this will be replaced, of course, with an 8.1 version, but one of the great news in it now is that you can actually get a PowerShell script to recreate it every time you need to recreate it. And the reason why you want to recreate will be obvious in a second. I'll just tell that we are going to use a 32-bit Dart image. I have my source files. You need the source files. I have them located in the Windows 8. Enterprise DVD. Next. And then we can select what tool we want to use. And some of the tools we want to use, some of the tools we want to hide for the users. Because if they are only users with ordinary privileges on the computer, we don't want them to be able to use Locksmith that can reset the administrator password. That could be dangerous. So we will make sure that we remove Locksmith from the user. But we will like all other tools to be there. We can go in and tell them how we want to use the remote connection. We can specify port number, or we can use the Windows port number. We might want them to get a message, call every IT help. At dot 47 0047 and a number. That's the message that will pop up for the user so it knows where to call to get help. On the advanced options, we can add drivers because you may have computers that have new network card or new storage drivers, and we will make sure that they work, so we can add them here. We can go in and add different Windows PE add-ons. We can go in and add a crash analyzer if we want to use it to analyze a blue screen. If we get blue screen, we can actually use this tool to analyze the blue screen, so it's both for servers and for clients. And we can tell how the Windows Defender antivirus should be updated. And this is also the reason why we want to recreate it every now and then, because if we recreate it, we will make sure that we can scan for viruses when we boot it up. Windows Defender will, of course, update itself if you have internet access on the computer, but if you don't have internet access, then it's nice to update the image so we are sure you have the latest definition files. When we create the image, we can also create ISO files, WIM files, and generate the PowerShell script. And we go and edit the image by adding more files. If we take edit image, we can go in and add every files we need to add to it. For instance, we want to add more sys internals stuff, or we want roadkill.net stuff, or everything we can run in a Windows PE environment. So we can just add it here. I will not generate the files because it takes quite a long time to generate them. So that's the Dart. And again, we will have some commands here we can use to recreate. A command, it's a typo here. We can see it's a reagent missing the C. But the slash boot to RE is nice to know about. If you want to check out if your RE actually are working, you can just go in and type the reagent C slash boot to RE, and then you will boot into the recovery environment. So if you want to force a recovery environment startup, that's the way to do it, instead of trying to crash your computer, so it will boot into it. So now we have created the image. We need to make sure that we patch it. Are we going to patch it offline or online? A lot of people tell me that now we only do it offline because it saves us time. It's easy. We can do it in configuration manager, no problem. We just set it up to do it once a month. That's okay. It works, but you cannot add service packs. You will have some update that will not be installed. For instance, a lot of .NET framework service packs have not been successful in injecting in offline modus. So you will have some missing updates. Also, if you do it offline, you will have some files that are triggered to need a reboot to be replaced. So you actually need to reboot it after installation just to make sure. I like to do it with online patching, because online patching means that all the patches will be installed, service packs will be installed, the computer will be rebooted, and since it's in a virtual environment, it will actually be tested by rebooting and started up, and it will be fast to see if something has been broken. So I prefer to do it with the online patching. Just a quick look on how we can patch it. To download patching for offline patching, you can use a tool called VSUS Offline. The VSUS Offline utility will download every update you have selected for the operating system you have selected and Office packages you have selected. So that makes it possible for us to get a folder with all the updates for the Windows that we want to be updated. So that's a nice way to download them. There are also a lot of scripts out there, PowerShell scripts, that can download and patch your image if you want to do it offline. The commands for offline patching is by using dsym. And we are going to quickly patch up my image here. I have an image in my Vim folder. called InstallVim. And I need to inject some updates that are located in my updates folder. I have just put two updates in there to save some time. So let's take a look at the cheat sheet and see the commands. First thing is we're going to get information about the Vim file. And with this and get Vim info, pointing to the Vim file, we will see that we have two different Vim files in it. I want to get more info about the index one. And we can see that this is a Windows version when it was created, when it was modified, and what language, and so on. So this is the image I want to patch up. To patch it up, I need to mount it to a folder. And I'm actually going to use the mount folder. And it will now create a folder structure that makes it possible for me to go in and add files as well. I now have opened the Vim file, open access, so I can add whatever I want to add to it. If you do go into the file structure, make sure you close it before you close the update process. You can see the mount file, and you can find the Windows structure. So if you want to change files, add files, modify something, we can actually do it now. Close it up here. I'm going to add patches. And if the patches are unnecessary, it will skip them. If it's from the wrong system, it will skip them. It will only add the ones that it needs to add. This is an offline version of patching the system. I'm now going just to unmount it and discard its changes because I don't want to use time to create a new Vim file with the patchings. So let me just do the unmount Vim with the slash discard command. I'm going to show you very quick how we do this in MDT. In MDT, we'll create an image creation process. I have now used the Microsoft Hydration Kit 6.0. So if you want to test this out, you can actually just search for Microsoft Hydration Kit, and then you will download a totally virtual environment with MDT Configuration Manager, domain controllers, and everything you need already in place. So here we have created a deployment for image creation in the task sequence. That's easy to build, it's just a wizard. The only thing with the wizard is that you need to remember to go into task sequence and enable Windows Update. So you have this one you need to think about. Windows Update are disabled after running the default wizard. When I'm creating an image that I will use to capture and deploy to all my computer, I also add additional Windows updates. We can see that you will always have two Windows updates. It's a Windows update pre-application and after application installation. The reason for that is that some applications need patches before they can be installed. And some applications will give you more updates when they are installed. So I usually add just about two or three extra Windows update in my image creation just to make sure that all the patches are in place. Because when you add some patches, there will be some new patches, and sometime you need a reboot and so on. So that's why I do it when I create my deployment image. Dism commands are also in here, so we can take a look at them later. We are now finished with the management, finished with the deployment, and now we're going over to the management phase. And we need to do whatever we can do to make the user experience as smooth as possible. And we most likely will do that by using group policies. The first thing we need to do about group policies is that we need to take control of the group policies before we let the group policy control the user computers. Because it's so easy to create group policies that will destroy the environment instead of better it. So we need to make sure that we follow some basic rules on how to create group policies. We have the default ways that we have used all the time in the different organization unit structure, so we can add it to the right place in Active Directory. We can control it with group membership, and we can disable and enable and use loopback processing. The thing I see that are rarely used are VMI filtering. Windows Management Instrumentation makes it possible for us to make sure that all the updates or setting updates we want to be implemented only on Windows 8 computers will be implemented on Windows 8 computers. All the settings for Lenovo computers are done only on the Lenovo computers, and so on. So the VMI is quite powerful. We also have a tool in the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack that will help us. That's called Advanced Group Policy Management. We are going to take a look at both of these features. We just put in some helpful VME strings here so you can add to your environment. It's Windows 8, it's Windows 7. We could create, as you see in the Windows 8, it's select from Windows operating system where version is like 6.2, that's Windows 8. My guess is that Windows 8.1 will be 6.3, or maybe 6.2 dot something. But we'll figure that out sooner or later. There are also a link to a blog that will take you in how you can create this and the different ways of getting your VMI information. Start my domain controller. Here we can see I have already created some VMI filters. If we go into the Windows 8, it's the exactly same line as I showed you. Select where Windows operating system is equal to 6.2 and product type is 1. Product type 1 is workstation, product type 2 is computers, and 3 is domain controllers. That's why I have added it, to make sure that no server will run these settings at all. So with this filtering, it's easy for me to create the group policy I have created up here called common setting for Windows 8 and using a Windows 8 VMI filter. So I just select this filter, and I will now be totally sure that this group policy will only run on computers with Windows 8, nothing else. I have done the same with Windows 7, with a Windows 7 VMI filter. To create a filter, you just go into the VMI filters, new, type in select from, and you can go in and get whatever filter you want. One of the filters I have put out here is the select from where the computer is Lenovo. Okay. Doing that, I will make sure that it's only Lenovo computers that will run this policy. I can also add the Windows 8 settings to make sure that it's only Lenovo with Windows 8 that run this. So if we are installing specified Windows 8 Lenovo software by using group policy, we will now make sure that's only those computers that install them. We don't have to be thinking about always structures and group settings all the time. If I go into one of my clients, client two here, I can use the GP result, /R/scope, computer. I now have run a check for what policies have been run on this computer. And we can see that I have run several different settings. But if we go down to policies that was filtered out, you can see that I have are denied by VMI filter on the Windows 7 common settings. And I also can see that my common settings for Windows 8 have been applied. So by creating simple filters, we can do it much more easier to target what we want to target when we are doing group policies. Advanced group policy management is a tool we use to make sure that we can optimize how we create the policies and who can create and modify and apply policy. We can give a user the right to add a policy, but not add it to the users. It needs to get approved before you add it. And just let us take a look at the tool. We still use the group policy and advanced group policy management. Just add a change control folder down here. Let's just get that up. You can now install this agent on a client, and the client can actually check out a group policy, take it home with him, and work on it at home without any network access at all, take it back to the office, and then check it in, and I, as an administrator, can go in and approve the changes he have done. Nothing will happen before I have improved the changes. We have some controlled policies here. Like you can see, the config are now checked in. I can check it out. So before I can do any editing, I need actually to check it out, and then I can edit. That will make sure that the editing will happen only from one place at a time, not several places at once. Sometimes you have two people working on the same group policy, and the guys doing the latest changes will overwrite the other guy doing the previous changes. We can import files from policies. We can export. We can create templates, so if you have a favorite policy that you want to use, but you want to change it a little bit, or you know you are going to make 10 policies almost the same, then you just create a template and you use that as a base to create new settings. We have the recycle bin, so if you have been stupid and deleted a group policy, you can actually now go in and take recovery of it. You can right-click the policy and go in and see the history of the policy, when did stuff change, and how many unique versions of that policy do we have. See, it's just loading the GPO history now. Take some time because it needs to contact the central archive and get the information and analyze stuff. Here we have it. You can see all that have been changed on it, who have done the change, when it was created, and when it was applied. Unique version will tell me that I have two different versions of the first one when it was created and the second one when I checked it in for the first time and had done changes. We can also right-click it to figure out what's the difference in the versions we have. We can have it as a HTML file, a XML file, or we can also go on settings to see what's the settings on this policy now. So it gives us much more control over the group policies. I'm going to jump on because we are going to demonstrate some group policies in a short while. Then over to some performance changes. There have been several improvements in Windows 8, and I'm sure there will be more in Windows 8.1, so it will be fun to see when it arrives at 26th, start to test it out. But we know that the install time have been reduced, and we know that the boot time have been reduced. The reason why they have been able to reduce the boot time is they have actually gone in and changed the way services starts or how they can start. We have the automatic, we have the automatic delayed start, and we have manual that have always been there. But we now also have a manual trigger start that makes it possible to have services that you know you need to start them, and you need to start them fast when you need them. But with the manual trigger start, you don't have them running when the computer starts. It will actually start when the application needing them starts instead. So by using the manual trigger start, we can save time during boot up, and we will use less resources when the computer runs. And less battery, of course. If you are going to tune Windows, the first part we need to check out is services. Is there any services we can stop? Are there any services we don't need at all? Are there something that should be manual triggered, and so on? There are a link on the bottom on this page that take you for a page that have been trying out the different services, what you can start, what you can disable, and so on. But the recommendation is always test it out in your environment to make sure. You need also to defragment the hard drive for the user. If it's an SSD, you don't defragmentize, you just trim it every now and then, and Windows 8 and Windows 7 trim it automatically, but there are a command to check if the trim are turned on or turned off. Page file is always something to discuss. Do we need it, don't we need it, or so on, but I'm not going into the discussion if we need a page file or not, but reality is that we don't need so big page file. So we need to make it smaller, and most likely we want to make sure that it's not getting fragmented all the time. We have the page file. My recommendation will be to set the page file at a fixed size, because if it's a fixed size and you defragment your hard drive, then it will be optimized all the time. If it's changing the size, it will be spread all over the hard drive. If it's an SSD disk, it doesn't matter that much. But if it's an SSD, you want it smaller so you don't use a lot of space for your page file. The same thing is with hibernation file. It could be smart to turn off hibernation if you have an SSD disk and you have storage issues. You need to use the space for other stuff than hibernation files and page files. The next thing, performance-wise, is all the visual effects. If you have an older computer or you just want to tune out the last piece of power in the computer you have, you will most likely gain a lot by changing the visual effects. We can do it manually here by adjusting for best performance. And then we saw a lot of features disappear. If we do that, it will might not look that smooth as we want it to look, so make sure that you really want it. But remember again, we can do this with a group policy that could be controlled by VMI, and then we can make sure that it's only computer with little memory, bad CPUs, and so on, that will actually remove these visual parts. Group policies have been around forever. Most people have used it. But sadly, I see that not everybody uses the preferences part, and I don't use it enough. I had a customer that had 1,700 lines of script when they started up the computers. So they used quite a long time to boot up. They didn't know 70% of the lines what they were doing, but they didn't dare to remove it because it might do something, it might not do something. But it was a slow logon, so we decided that to make sure that thing gets smoother, we create a new OAuth structure, didn't implement the logon script, we just created group policies. And we ended up with 5-6 group policies and a script that was about 17 lines. So we just removed 2 zeros. And the logon time was reduced quite a bit. I'm going to show you some of my favorite group policies. You remember we did the performance tuning. I want to do that with on a group policy also. To make sure that this worked the right way, I'm just going to do that part on the client itself, because I have a client that I have done the changes on. That's on client 2. You can just check it out here to see that we have. Performance, and we want it to adjust for best performance. We are now doing the easy way, just turning everything off. We can actually create a group policy with registry settings that just turn off the tweaks you want to turn off and leave on the one you want to leave on and so on. But for this time being, we are just now going to fix it so everything here is turned for best performance. So I just start group policy management on the client. I could also use remote registry access to reach it, but we do it the light way now. Go into preferences. This is a computer settings. Go into registry. And the cool thing now is that we have a registry wizard. And we are wanting to pick it up from the local computer. We can also connect it to another computer, but we are now doing it on the local computer. The setting is under current user, software, Microsoft, Windows, current version, Explorer, and visual effects. And we have a visual effects settings that are set to 2. If it's set to 1, it's for best. 2 is best performance, 1 is best visual. So finish on that one. I have now made sure that all the computers running this policy will have the setting without going in and doing the job manually. I can also make sure that, let's see, we set some item level targeting, and item level targeting can be that the computer's CPU speed should be 1 megahertz or less. Or it's greater than or equal to that, and then we need to make a custom. But we can set item level target to make sure that the setting we are putting in here can be based on VMI queries, it can be based on on groups you are a member of. It can be based on application you have installed, and almost everything you desire for is available here at selection disk space, file name, IP address, language, and so on. And the VMI query. Another setting I love to use, it's security related. I want to make sure that all my users, my computer's users, are not admins. I want to make sure that I have an admin that I can give out to them when they call and say, I need to be admin. I'm now in a hotel in Madrid, and I need to do some admin related work. And I cannot connect to the network, so you cannot access it remotely and do it for me. Okay, then you can log on with certain user, and this is the password. And then we create a group policy that change either the username or the password for the next time anybody tries to log on. So we are going to go in and create a fun setting here. You can see we have the local users and groups. We can go and add a local user, and we create a local user called Superman. Must not change password. Password never expires. User cannot change password if you want to. And set a password on it. That, apply. So now we have created a local users that everybody that runs this policy will have on its computer. But we need to make sure that it's an administrator, and we might also want to disable the local administrator that's already on the computer. So let's just modify first by using update. Administrator, you can rename it to not admin, and we can account is disabled, like that. And we are going to create a local group or modify a local group with update. Group name is, let's see, administrators. We can also delete all members, all groups in it, but then we need to make sure that we add every group we need to be in it. So we need to add domain admins, service users that should be running locally. But the good thing is, if we give the user the admin rights, and he know that the password will be changed, then he will most likely go in here and add himself in the local admin group. So we make sure that the next time the group policy are being refreshed, it also throw out everybody in the group. So if he had put himself in the group, he will be removed, and the password on the Superman user will be been changed, so he cannot longer be admin. Superman, add to this group. And we can also then go in and add domain users, domain administrators, and so on. The good thing with this is it's now so easy for me to change the passwords on the Superman user that I just create a new setting here. The first one was just to create the user and set the default password. We can go in with local user, update Superman, and give him the new password. Like that. And we can create several new passwords by using item level targeting. We can actually go in and use what department they are a member of based on security group. So if the computer is a member of the sale computer group, it will have this password. If it's a technical group, it will have this password, and so on. So we can have different passwords on different groups but still we just do it from one place, so we get control over it. There are one more thing with Windows 8 that's a bit pesky, and that's where do you going to go to get your settings. There are a lot of settings, and they are spread all over. And from Windows 7, you have some of the same problem, but it's more distinct in Windows 8. And we have the God mode. Anybody heard about the God mode? Yeah, some of you have heard about it. That's a nice feature. I can show you how it works, and I can show you how we can roll it out to the user we want to have it. So we go into my cheat sheet. It's quite a difficult name to remember, so that's why I need a cheat sheet. So, but if you Google it, you will find it, and it will be up on my blog today or tomorrow. I'm going into a folder, doesn't matter where, can take it on my desktop, create new folder. I might have it there before, so I just put it on a D drive. A temp folder, new folder, and paste in the name. And you will see on my computer I'm showing extended information, so you will see the entire name. But usually if you have an ordinary view, system files view and so on, you will just see good God mod as the name. If I go into this one, you will see you have every bit of setting you need available in one place. We have the BitLocker setting, we have the manage credentials, if you want to use credential manager, we have the display settings, ease of use settings, file history settings, keyboard settings. Everything is now in one place. So it's much more easier to find whatever you need. We can even find Windows Defender, and we can find Firewall and Power Scheme and everything you need. We can also do this on a group policy. By using a group policy, we just go into the user configuration, preferences, Windows settings, and create folders, new folder, create, folder part, C, tools, / and clipboard type text. Apply, OK, and it will now be appended in the tools folder for everybody. And if we want to have it on the desktop, we just create a shortcut, new shortcut, create, where do we want it, desktop, and it should be a shell, let's see. System location, desktop, target path, type in tools, and the name again, like that, and we will have a shortcut on the desktop as well. So we can see we can do almost everything you want to do with the group policy. See that I have remember most of it. The difference between group policies and preferences is that preferences is something you basically just get once and you can change it. But that's not entirely true. You will see that you can not change the password to whatever you want after we have set it with a preference, because it will be rolled back. So some of them are actually as powerful as group policies, but a lot of them are possible to delete. Like the shortcut I just created, you can delete it. And then I need to create a new one if you want to roll it back again. We have the last thing I'm going to talk about, that's the user experience virtualization, to make sure that the user get all these settings. We can use user experience virtualization. It's also a part of the MDOP package. We can install an agent on all the clients. It's a small agent. And we also need a setting location template, and we need a setting storage location. A setting location template is actually just a bunch of XML files telling what kind of settings do we want to roam with the user. So when the user logs on to one computer, he will create settings location, setting storage with the settings he wants, for instance, in Office. So when he logs on to a new computer, it will be the same. We can create our own templates, and I'm going to do that now. Time is running, so I'm going to do it a bit fast. Yeah, let's see. Need to go into computer tree. Here I have, just to show that it works, I will go into Notepad. This is standard Notepad. We can see that it's small typing, nothing we would like to have, so we want to go in and change it. So we go in and select nice font, nice font style, big font size, OK. Looks like that. I just go out of the application, lock the settings for the user. In the newest version of user virtualization, you have mid service pack 1. They have changed when they save what you do do different. So when you are now locking the computer, you will save your settings to the storage. If you are shutting down or booting up, it will check location and save the different settings you have created during your sessions. But also every hour, it will actually save the changes you have done. So there have been some changes in Service Pack 1, and I'm sure there will be a lot more. If I now go into the computer 2, that also have the agent installed, start up Notepad, start to type. You can see it used the font and the settings I had. So this works great on the Windows application, and you have a lot of XML files you can download, but it's also quite easy to create your own. Just log on to my client where I installed the generator. Oh, not pictures. I have installed Foxit Reader on this computer, and I want to virtualize the sets in on all my Foxit readers users. So we go into create a settings location template. File path to the file I want to start. Let's see. That's located. At 64, okay. Select Foxit Reader. And you just now need to start it. Yes. It will now start to analyze what part of registry are being used and what files are being used. So if I now close this one, and it optimizes settings locally, and we push next. And you have now discovered the location for the registry settings, and if there were any files, we can see that it's also discovered the files. So we don't need to know anything, but if we think it's missing a registry setting, we can just go into non-standard and add our registry key. I have added one already here. Show in registry editor. So we can go in and find the keys we want to add. The same thing with files, non-standard files. We can go in and add the different settings we want to add. So if we need to implement more file or if we need other places in registry, it's quite easy to do it. Just give it the template name, register files, and settings we want to add, or total added. Create the template file. Create it on the desktop now. That. My notepad view isn't that great. Let's see if we can do it even worse. Like that. In this window, we can actually go in and expand what version it will work for, because now it will work for the version I run it on, but if there will be a major or minor release that's using the same settings, we can just expand it for what file version it will support. So it will, for instance, support major version 6 with minor version 3 to make sure that the two next versions will also be supported. So it's quite easy to create the files. You can open them later and edit them if you want to edit them. We just take this file I just now created, copy it. I have created my storage location on DC1, where I have the settings catalog, paste it in here, and now the next time my users start Foxit Reader, it will actually create the settings in his home folder, because I have set it up to use his home folder. If I go into the user's home folder, we will see on the user, it's a hidden share, so we don't see it here. I need to go into DC1. And my file share, hold just home, and setting packages. So these are the settings that this user are roaming. It roams some Acrobat Reader settings, it roams Internet Explorer setting, desktop settings, and team settings. So the user will have the same experience whatever computer he uses. And he will, on the Acrobat Reader, for instance, if he go into a new computer, he don't have to select the agreement and download update settings, because they will be roaming. So, in conclusion, we need to remember the mission. The mission is, of course, happiness. And to be happy, we need to make sure that our users are happy. So we need to support the users. And you might not want to do it the way my forefather did it, by going into the long bolt with axes and just bash some heads. We need to make sure that we search for clues. What are the user pains? And remember that the user are used to the pains, so they will never tell you. They will tell you something, but you need to make sure to figure out where the problem lies. And be proactive. Don't wait for the user to come to you. You go to the user without the axe, hopefully. If you need more information, you can all go down to the store and buy one of these two books. We have the Deployment Fundamentals. That's a good book on deployment. And we have the Windows 8 in the Enterprise that just cover everything you need to know about Windows. so you can go and optimize it and use a lot of the product I went through here. Remember also that the Springboard page are available for you. It's free, it's lots of information, so please go in there. So, in conclusion, remember to fill out your evals. It's important for us, it's important for you, and I will just say it in the words of the King. Thank you very much.